And welcome, fans, to this week's edition of The Lockdown featuring T Cove and the Ball Hawk. Special guest this week, Matt London, the man, the myth, the legend. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Thank you. Thanks. A little scary to be on something called The Lockdown, man. I've been in lockdown for about 4 months, so this is tough.
Well, hey, this is a
and you lockdown corners were never my favorite anyway. You know
right.
What I mean?
Hey, look at him.
True. Yeah, well, this is a fun version of being locked down with us two. So trust me, it will be.
That's right.
I promise you. I promise you, it will be famous. How things been for you, man?
Come again? I'm sorry. Say again.
How things been for you?
Been good. Been at Woodbury Forest now 4 years, working as an athletic director. And we literally have been in lockdown in terms of the community and trying to figure out how to reopen here. So we're like everybody else in the world with that aspect of what's going on. Just trying to figure that out from a job standpoint.
No doubt. So take me back to Ridley High School.
Oh geez.
Yeah, I'm gonna go back.
Hey, they want to know about Ridley High School. Ridley High School.
you as a three sports superstar, you know, baseball, basketball, and football. Speak to me a little bit about that little baseball prowess.
You know, I played some baseball, Dr. Smith. I played some baseball growing up in football and basketball, and played baseball until about my 11th grade year, and. You know, basketball became such a priority that I was going to play in the spring and some AAU things. And but the baseball team said, come on out and keep playing and throw for us on your off days. So I just pitch for them and play and just do that kind of thing. And I actually stopped playing because I would go out and pitch for a team and then go play for an AAU basketball team and come back. And it just didn't feel right. You know how that is. You don't feel part of the team and you felt like you're kind of in and out.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I stopped playing baseball at that point, doing the pitching thing, because it just felt like I was tapping into a team that was giving 100% to the whole group and I wasn't. And so I just stuck with basketball and football at that point before I had a chance to come to Virginia.
Okay. And so then let's talk about that first love of hoops.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I was coming out of high school, and it's kind of a weird position to kind of have your first love of hoops, but you know, you're getting a lot of love for football. And so, I coming out of high school, I had some opportunities to visit some really great schools for both and football and basketball. And when it came down to it, I just couldn't give up basketball. I wanted to, at the end of the day, play that sport. And, but I had to choose eventually. I decided to come to Virginia after visiting Virginia. Back in the day, my dad put together a VHS tape and sent it out to some schools I was interested in.
VHS.
And so we sent it to different schools just to see. And Coach Odom came to one of my games at Ridley High School. And then I got to come down and visit, and it was just a great place, and I fell in love with it. There happened to be some room on the team, and when I came to Virginia, originally, I don't know if you guys know this, but I was on football scholarship because they didn't have any basketball scholarships left. So I was going to come and actually be in summer ball with you, Cove, that first summer.
Okay.
And Coach Holland was he said, Matt, just come. You don't have to do anything, but you just got to be on the team because we don't have any basketball scholarships left. And that's how the NCAA works. The larger sport absorbs a dual sport athlete.
Mm.
So Lance Blanks, remember that name?
Yes.
Lance played and transferred to Texas like a few weeks before I arrived on campus, and I got his basketball scholarship.
Wow.
So I played some – Got to start out with basketball, and after a year of really working hard and doing the best I could, I felt, you know, well, maybe I ought to try this football thing.
Right.
You know, maybe I gave up too soon on it, and that was the beginning of doing both sports, and I was really grateful to Coach Welsh and Coach Holland for that.
Wow, you know, it's pretty amazing, man. You know, you had a you committed to Penn State to play football.
Is that? You
know,
yeah.
Interest from Notre Dame, and you're like, you know what? Let's pump the brakes on that. Yeah, I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go shoot this round ball for a little bit down in Charlottesville.
I'll tell you what. I skipped over that part a little bit. You know, when you come from Philadelphia, if you're not playing and you have a chance to go to Penn State or Notre Dame, and you don't choose either. You better not go back.
Wow. Wow. So that's the real reason you're still in Charlottesville.
Right, yeah. I'm not allowed back. I'm not allowed back, man. Yeah, no, that was a really amazing time and fortunate time in my life. I mean, to have those kind of choices and it worked out awesome. I mean, I couldn't have played it any better. I couldn't have played out any better. I just was really grateful to it. In fact, yeah, I mean, you know, I had committed to Penn State to play football, and then I called up Coach Paterno. I said, look, I just can't give up basketball, and he didn't want me to play basketball.
Right.
Mm. So he just wished me well, and he wished me well until my first year playing football. You don't remember this, but we played Penn State at Virginia. It was the first of that two-year series.
Ooh.
The second year, we beat them. You know, up at Penn State.
Last that first go round.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember this though. I get on the field at the end because they're crushing us, right? So Coach Welsh puts me in at the end. I look over, and Joe Paterno puts the Sarge back in, and he blitzed right away.
Blitz.
After me.
That hurt.
And I dropped back. I just was going to throw a ball, and I couldn't even get it off. And I'm peeling myself off the field after getting sacked by three or four linebackers. And I look over, and Coach Welsh is just throwing his hat on the ground, yelling at me, you know, get rid of the ball. You got to get rid of the ball.
Come on, Matt. Get rid of it. You can't hold it.
Come on, Black. Come on, Matt.
Christ.
I just want to know. Hey. I want to know what the Matty B's VH1 mixtape music was. That's
ooh.
What I'd like to know.
Oh, my
right,
God.
Right. But hey, for all the for our listeners, Dougie Fresh has just entered the building. What's
yes.
up, y'all?
Six
What's
minutes, up, Dougie Fresh, you're on.
I got it.
Welcome to the show.
I did the 6 minute countdown already. I've been doing that since eighth grade, yo.
Good, what's going on, Doug? How you doing?
Good, my man. What's up? Been a long
Not
time, Maddie.
Long time. You lost all your hair up here, man. I'm getting some down here, and mine's getting all gray.
I'm lucky though. I look better with no hair.
Yeah.
Ooh, talk spicy. Talk spicy.
Maddie knows. I used to try to have a little high top, little, you know, faded up or whatever.
Oh yeah,
you did.
I'll send you pictures.
Hey, but Matt, you can't. We're not gonna let you off the hook. What was the music in the highlight? Now, what your dad put in there? You know.
I got to tell you, man, my dad didn't put any music in it. You know, he wasn't that kind of guy, and it wasn't that kind of thing. That was still back in the day, man. You can still hear the parents yelling in the background of those videos. You know, my music of choice back then, and probably still, was like the Bruce Springsteen and that crew. You know, that okay. kind of music. You know,
that's what I was picturing. I didn't want to say it. That's what I was thinking.
No, man, I just Bruce was my guy.
Can't go wrong with Bruce.
Man.
Was your mom the one screaming rebound in the background? Like my mom was, no matter what.
Yeah.
Was going
on. Oh, everything. No, it was more my dad. My mom was pretty quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was more my dad. Yeah, yelling defense and all that kind
Where's
of stuff.
Where's the foul?
Yeah.
So I gotta tell you all my Matt Blunden story. Intro to him. So I'm being recruited, obviously, big time recruit hawk, 1989.
There we go.
Talk. And they're in the NCAA tournament and making a huge run. I don't know if you guys have done
that. Ah, that run, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they play in Nashville. I'm from Fayetteville. I go up Providence, Middle Tennessee State. My best friend was on Middle. And they offer me.
Wait, you said Middle Tennessee State?
Middle Tennessee State. Quincy Vance was my best friend growing up on my team. But you guys, yeah. Now, Bryant taught my boy Q a lesson.
Yeah.
That wasn't even fair. And so the Coach Holland offers me at the dinner with all you guys. And I mean, Cove, like, it's not even close. Like, my offers compared to, like, Virginia. And I'm like, you know what, Coach, let me think about it. I'll visit. I'm going to do my visits. And my high school coach and my boy were there, and they were just like kicking me, like, dude, what are you talking? He's in. I'm like, no, I'm going to visit. So I go on my visit. They're getting ready for Michigan because you just beat Oklahoma. And I think it may have been spring break.
Oof.
And the weekend before, I'm in Arkansas State. I'm drinking wine coolers. I'm in the party. I go to Nebraska, Texas A&M. Cool. Now, and I come and Matt Blunden, who I'm obviously already looking up to, seeing on TV, he's my host. This dude takes me to a movie. I have no idea. I think we saw like Coming to America, which is like my fifth time seeing it.
Yes.
But I mean, they're good, to their credit, you know, they're all serious. They're in tournament mode. Like it's not, and I think it might have been spring break too. But Maddie, I mean, you guys were the best, but that was the worst visit I've had by far.
Wow. They definitely picked the wrong guy to bring someone on a visit. I mean, come on, man. Wow. That's funny.
So Matt, so that first year, 88 red shirt, didn't see a bunch of action, but Fresh kind of alluded to it. 89, massive success, trip to the Elite Eight. Describe what that year was, man. You know, you were a starter and major contributor to the team. Tell me a little bit about how that was for you.
Man, that was a crazy year. That was a lot of fun. You know, I went through a year of frustration with hoops because I felt like I was working really hard, and you have that kind of inside you growing up. You work hard, you can get it done. And I just felt like I wasn't getting a chance and wasn't getting it done. And reality is, it wasn't much of an offensive threat. You know, I wasn't that kind of player, but I had to get to a spot where I had a role. And that year, I just kind of worked it. The team needed the kind of role of defense and rebounder and that kind of hustler and that kind of thing. And that's where I fit in. And it was an amazing run for us that year. You had Richard Morgan, who just could one night hit 43 points without blinking. And, you know, you have, you know, in our class, John Cronty and Kenny Turner and those guys were just amazing. So just finding, a niche on a team is how it worked for me. And so, that run we had that year was so much fun. I mean, I think it was Middle Tennessee State. I'll never forget that game because during that, you know, I was the guy that had to guard their toughest guy or their biggest guy. And, and you know, being 6'7", 240, I was little compared to some of these guys. And I was just bugging this guy on defense. And I forget his name, but I come running down the court after really playing defense on him. And I come running down the court, and I get to the elbow on our offensive end. And my man just pulls up his elbow and lays me out flat on the court. And it was just but that was my role. I had to play hard defense and get rebounds. And, you know, sometimes people didn't like it too much and he didn't like it too much. But, you know, we got to play Oklahoma, who didn't really know who we were. And so we got into it. And, you know, being able to, in that particular game, you know, Stacey King, who's a guy that, you know, played in the NBA for a while, and we got to shut him down for a little bit. And that was just huge. And so we did hit Michigan with Glenn Rice. And when he banked in a three at halftime, we knew we were in trouble. You know? So they went on to win it all. And they didn't really blink at anybody. They were the real deal. But, you know, looking back at something like that, you know, being second, you know, our kids joke a lot about, you know, a movie they love, you know, what's second place? It's, you know, you're the first of the losers type thing. Yeah. And so they laugh about that sometimes, that, you know, I was fitted twice for rings and didn't get a ring. I was fitted. We were fitted for the Final Four ring. So you're fitted for a Final Four ring going into the Michigan game, and we get whacked.
Oh, man.
And then later in my career, I was fitted for, we were fitted for, AFC Championship rings in Kansas City, and we got beat by the Bills. So,
isn't that a no-no to do that before this shit happens?
Well, you would think, yeah, they had to do it because they had to order the stuff, you know. And I don't care about that, but they jinxed us, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think they fit us for our NIT rings. They just threw us some shit at the end. It was like, hey, thanks
for playing.
You got rings for the NIT?
Hey, don't sleep on the NIT back there.
I was just saying.
Don't sleep back then. We tried to lose the first game of Villanova because it was spring break. And Brian and Anthony were like, nah. We're taking it.
Matt, did you just describe yourself as basically an irritant on the basketball court?
I guess I was a little bit. I guess that was me. It was just the energy I had for the game, and I loved it, you know. And that's why it cracks me up now. I'm an athletic director. And we're in the middle of this COVID thing, and they're listing basketball as kind of a moderate risk sport, and it just cracks me up. Basketball's not a moderate risk sport. In my mind, at least, it's a high risk sport. And so, you know, because of the contact and all that. So,
you got to think about the ACC then. We're going to Clemson, and he's in there with Eldon Campbell, Dale Davis. North Carolina's got like 7 7-footers every year. Scott, messing with Chilcutt, those guys. And Matt's downplaying it. He had that nice little 7 to 10 foot jumper. You turn around and give it a lot of glass. Touch.
10 is generous. 10 is generous.
He wasn't scared to use the glass either. You know what I'm saying?
No, I wasn't.
Oh, he's saying you were shooting bricks, man. He tried to say you were shooting bricks.
Well, that year, you remember, Dougie, were you on a team that year we played at Notre Dame? I think it was. We played Notre Dame. They had LaFonso Ellis on the team.
Don't get me started on that one.
I know. Digger was the coach, Digger Phelps. And Brian Stith, we just went off, and we beat Notre Dame at Notre Dame. And later on, you know, back in the day, none of these things. So you didn't get the messages until it was in the newspaper the next day.
Yeah.
So the next day, my friends called me up and they said, "Man, look at the newspaper." And then it was a quote from Digger Phelps. It said that he knew they were in trouble when Blunden banked in a baby hook.
it had nothing to do with Bryant having 19. No,
he knew the lucky Irish wasn't going to happen that night when I banked in a little baby hook.
It was either Digger or John McLeod the next year. He had a quote in the paper asking the reporter who Bryant Stith was.
Oh my God!
What a mistake! What a mistake!
Wake up, a sleeping dog.
Something like that. Anyhow.
Yeah.
Wow. So Matt, so as we transition a little bit, after coming off an Elite Eight, then rolling into football, then it's, you know, you're backing up the GOAT.
Right. I know, right. Yeah. So,
there's not going to be a lot of time, but, you know, Sean goes down.
Yeah.
We got to go to Clemson.
Yeah.
How did you prepare for that, man? And was it in any way going to the Elite Eight? Where, you know, did it give you a sense of confidence being on the big stage? Because that was the stage going down to Death Valley.
You know, you got to remember, you had the GOAT behind center. You also had one out at wide receiver.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we had some players on that team.
Absolutely.
And so that question, I actually remember that kind of question back then. And definitely, you know, playing on the stage at the tournament. And the Elite Eight and all that gives you a sense of being on that stage and being a part of that. And I knew going into that game as a quarterback, I was just one part of the whole machine. Mm-hmm. You know, not trying to replace anybody. You're just a part of it. And that wasn't that hard. You know, we had great coaches, and you know, you had that kind of there was confidence in me from them to step in and at least fill in for that game. I'm getting wet real quick. I'm going to scoot up a little bit.
Okay.
All right. There we go. So that was, you know, that was the deal there. That game, but that was fun. That was a fun game. I don't know if it was that game or another one at Death Valley when we were playing them. I think it was that game. I got hit from behind and the front on a blitz, and the corner came over here. And was it Kirkland? Was he on that team?
Yeah. His
defensive end, LeVon Kirkland.
Absolute monster.
And he was a monster. Well, he came off the edge, and I was waiting to throw hot to our tight end, and he didn't look, so I just threw it in the back of his helmet. But I got hit in the back and the front and laid out, and I had no idea until Ethan Salib is, like, standing over me, and, "You all right?" I said, "Sure." And I get over to the sideline. And, you know, back in that time, you get hit like that and you're knocked out, you're going back in. You know, like, there's no – are you okay? Yeah, I'm okay. I go back in. But after that game, I'm walking off the field, and this like, 88-year-old little dude comes walking up to me with his hat like he got 70 years ago that he still had on. He looked up at me and he said, "Son, I just got to shake your hand." I said, "You know, we just lost. You know, like, this is not shakeable." And he said, I just got to shake your hand. I've never seen anybody take a hit like that and get up. Mm. I was like, man. I said, I don't know whether to thank you or, you know, it did feel pretty bad. But that was an amazing place to play. You know, that was an incredible place.
Yeah, I mean, I loved it, dude. I remember,
oh, my gosh.
I remember that game, and, you know, it was a sunny day, and the national anthem was being sang. I was so charged, dude. A tear was just streaming down my face. I was just so ready to play because it was like, yeah. You know, we got to end this day. I'm streak. I'm tired of about it, you know. It just seems like we just couldn't get over the hump, man.
Couldn't
get over the hump. But, you know, hey, you had a good game, 14-34, 243 yards, 2 touchdowns and 2 picks. And then, you know, we roll into 1990. The GOAT is doing his thing, and, you know, we're ranked number one in the country, and we lose at Georgia Tech. We stumble against Carolina, but we get the dub. We lose Sean against Maryland. They came, you know, it was kind of the same kind of next field where we were dominating. Yeah. We got conservative. They made a play. They got momentum. And then, you know, we lose that one too. And then we lose Sean and got to go to Tech.
To Virginia Tech, yeah.
Yeah. And Sean's not there. And you're the man once again. And we're playing in Blacksburg, night game, blistering cold. Do you remember that? Do you remember that?
Oh my gosh, do I? When is it not dark and cold at Tech? It's always dark and cold at Tech. It always feels that way, right?
Agreed.
It really does. Yeah, I really remember that. And it's funny. Again, you just feel like, you know, you're part of this great team. But what I remember most about that game was I was so angry at Derek Dooley. He dropped 5 of my passes that game. He dropped 5 passes. And so I was like, come on, Derek, you know, you're better than that. Right. In a joking way. And years later, when we're watching Tennessee on TV and he's in there in his orange pants and it's kind of I think it's a Saturday game, you know, SEC game, and my sons are with me. I'm saying, you see that guy right there in his orange pants? He's not the coach of Tennessee. He's got to drop 5 passes on me against Tech. Man, we're getting crushed here.
You know, hey, look, you went 21-34, and what you're saying is it should have been 26-34.
Absolutely, man. We should have won. Yeah, yeah.
You know, you put up 305 yards, 2 touchdowns, 3 picks. And thinking back to that game, man, I think we had a bit of a hangover with mentally, knowing that you were capable, but mentally, you know, Sean, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
it was Sean. Yeah,
it's Sean, you know. And so I think we just weren't into it, man. And I just remember being on that field. It was like, they are kicking the shit out of us.
Yeah.
Please make it stop. Like, you know, I remember guys running past me. Yeah, Cub, y'all know y'all deserve to be in the Sugar Bowl. I said, yeah, but we going. but I was so mad, man. I was so mad, especially because it was them. It was them.
I know, right? Well, we killed him the next year. My senior year at Virginia, we crushed him.
Yeah, yeah. So let's jump right in. So let me ask you this: do you think you were more of a gunslinging type?
A gunslinging type?
Yeah, gunslinger. Like you take chances. Like Brett Favre, he believes he can make.
Nah, I wasn't a Brett Favre. I wasn't that kind of guy. I'm not a risk guy, right? Mm-hmm. I definitely was a technique guy and practiced my craft and try to be really good at what I do, guys. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of what Tom Brady, I'm not putting myself anywhere near that, but just that idea of practicing your craft and being really good at it and doing it and trusting the process, trusting your teammates, that kind of thing. Brett Favre, I played with a guy that was real risky, Dave Craig, that kind of guy, just a gamer, a gamer type guy.
Right.
You know, Joe Montana was probably the best gamer of all time, you know, so – that wasn't my game or my skill set. My skill set was, you know, doing what I can do and play within myself.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Matt, when so did you remain on a basketball scholarship the entire time?
No. As soon as you start playing with the other team, you have to be on that scholarship. That rule actually happened years ago with Bear Bryant.
Okay.
Because he would load up the swim team with a bunch of football players and use up the swim team scholarship.
What?
Wow.
It's called the Bear Bryant rule. Like, it was basically the Bear Bryant rule. that was the nickname of the rule. So the team with the greater number of scholarships has to basically take on the load.
Wow.
And so it switched over to football as soon as I started playing football again.
And then once you play football, regardless when you went back to basketball, you just remained football.
Yeah, just remained a football scholarship. Yeah, instead of opened up a basketball scholarship. So you opened up a basketball scholarship
with somebody. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And Dougie, you got to come. Doug.
Congratulations, Doug.
Hold on.
Hold on.
And he's complaining about a movie and going to a movie visit.
Yeah. It's the good deeds of Matt Blunden is why you got a scholarship.
He's only reason I could get from my dorm to the gym too.
Yeah.
All those dudes. We didn't have cars yet.
No, we didn't.
All right. Yeah, I was saying that I remember the first year guy. I mean, we were first year in the upperclassmen would just drive past us when we were waiting on the bus, freezing cold. We're like, wow, here it is. We trying to get to winter workouts. And,
they honked the horn on you. Meep, meep.
Yeah, you one of those.
Y'all better hustle up.
We remember, Maddie, we used to have to do the 3-mile run on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
The wrestling team.
And it's, yeah, so it's, tell Cov, it's 6 in the morning. I come outside of Tuttle waiting for these guys. Usually Brian and Anthony will pick us up. And we see regular civilians, you know, regular human beings going to work. And they're running. They're getting their runs in the morning like you guys do now.
Yeah.
And we're sitting there like, go home. Go home. Like, we have to do this. We don't want to.
And you also remember, we had to do it. We thought we were tough because we run our 3 miles 3 days a week in the morning. And we get to breakfast at Brian Hall. And the swim team's already swum 2 hours every day, and they have a second practice that day.
Ooh.
You know, that swim team is the real deal.
Shout out to the swim team.
Shout out to the
real
athletes
for the world. Shout out to aquatics.
Yeah, the real athletes. By yourself in the water, 2 hours,
using
4 hours.
All their muscles.
They're crazy.
I wanted to be a triathlete real, real bad. Mm-hmm. You know why I'm not?
Swimming.
Yeah.
I did my first sprint triathlon. You know, I did the training, but I did the training in a pool.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came time to do the actual event, we swam in an open water lake. The water was, it was windy, so it was hella choppy.
Yep.
Man, I had my little scuba suit on. I'm ready for my wave. Boom, took off. I'm swimming. I turned to the left to get some water, get some air. Nothing but water. No problem. Kept 4 more strokes. Turned to get water, turn to get air, nothing but water. At that point, I forgot all the training in that pool.
And it was all
surviving the quarter mile. I mean, I was swimming on my back. Thoughts in my head are like, you know, all you have to do, they said, put your hand up and they'll come get you. I was like, oh man, I can't punk out like that. So I gutted it out until finally got to the end of the swim. I'm dragging out of the pool, out of the lake. They're like, yay, Cub, good way to go. I'm trying to find the drawstring to pull the scuba suit. It's in the front. I'm like, oh, God. So here I am. I take my suit off. I put my shoes on. I'm cycling. I'm 4 miles in on the bike. And the lady's like, oh, 8 miles left. I was like, damn, I've already been 12 miles. I was still thinking about how that water had whooped my ass.
Damn.
Back in that lake. And, you know, the rest of it was cake. But, man, that's why I'm not a triathlete right there.
Man, I'll tell you what, back as good a shape as we all were in or are in or whatever, I could run forever. I could ride a bike forever, ever. I'd get in the pool and go up and back as fast as I could, and I'm like, I'm done. Yeah. That's all I can do. I could. Man. It doesn't translate, man.
Mm-mm.
It's not.
All right, Maddie, so look, you are QB1. 1991. You're the guy, and you're playing Maryland. What were you thinking as you're rolling in? Like, yo, finally, this is my
team. So you got to Maryland. Sorry about that, guy.
Sorry, you got to Maryland, and you're QB1. You're up.
Yeah. You know, we had all the way up to that point. Gary Tranquil was our quarterback coach, and
it was Tranquil.
Well, Tranquil was all up until that year. Then Coach O'Brien took over, right? Because Coach Tranquil left and went to the NFL. He went to the Browns before he came back and ended up going to Tech and different places. But I say all that because we spent 4 years with him, with Coach Tranquil, we'd sit in quarterback meetings, and he would tell us how great Neil O'Donnell was, the quarterback for Maryland. And we watched film, and every time we watched, he's like, "Oh, this guy's the best quarterback ever." And he'd be smoking his cigarettes and, yeah, and just going on and on about how great Neil O'Donnell was. And so when I got to play my first game against Maryland, it just felt like, yeah, man, I'm ready to just, I'm ready for this, because I want to show Coach Trankel, really, you know, Maryland football is not all that. Mm-hmm. That wasn't a great game. You know, that wasn't a great start. And I don't remember a whole lot, but I think I do. One of the things I do remember, man, I should have probably had two or three picks that game. Hmm. I threw some balls right into the chest of some guys, and fortunately I threw it hard because it bounced off them.
It was probably Derek Dooley.
Fortunately, it bounced off a few guys, so we're, you know, that was a rough start. But we ended up having a decent year that year. You know, it could have been better, but, you know, I don't remember all the details and the ins and outs of all these games, mm-hmm, maybe some guys do, but I remember moments. And Maryland was always a tough one because, you know, I was sad when they left the ACC, not because I love Maryland, but they're, mm-hmm, just a part of it. You know, they're just, mm-hmm, it seems like they're a part of the ACC, and they were always a tough rival for us in hoops and then football.
Yeah. Right. Man, I don't know how much you guys could hear of it in football in terms of the fans. Maybe you could on the sidelines.
Yeah.
But Maddie, do you remember how bad their basketball fans were?
So bad. So bad.
Just like next level shit. Like, whoa. Yeah. You know.
Well, that game, my first start in Maryland, that game, my grandmother was there. And they were heckling my grandmother in the stands.
Dang.
You know, they were awful.
Yeah.
They were awful.
So. Well, not surprised.
They had some hot girls, though.
Wait, oh, I ended up marrying one of those.
Oh, you didn't marry? It is. All right.
You already know.
Yeah, no question. Dated one in college and married one, the second marriage, that is.
don't get me started there. Well, let's do another
time. That's a whole nother podcast.
There you go.
Okay, so then, Matt, you guys open up with the loss, and you missed the next two games.
I did.
You know, with an infection in your passing, was it your passing elbow?
Yeah, it was crazy. I got a staph infection that settled in my elbow, and who was the quarterback? Scott Zolak from Maryland. He got an infection as well, and we thought maybe something was on the field or I don't know what it was. But both of us missed games that year. I know I missed a couple there right away. Bobby, goodness, that didn't play really well. Mm-hmm. And that was hard, man, because that knocked me out. I mean, here I was finally getting to play, and it wasn't just feeling down physically because of that infection, but just mentally. Like, it was depressing to finally be at the point where you're starting, and now you're down. And that was tough. You know, it was what it was, and I Bobby came in and played really well, and we bounced back that year.
Right. I mean, but dude, when you came back game four though against Duke, you went on a run from there. I mean, you guys won seven out of the next eight. You threw at least two touchdowns, you know, in all of those games.
Mm-hmm.
And led them to the Gator Bowl.
Yeah, went to Clemson and tied Clemson that year too.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should have beat them. We had a field goal rolling. We were getting ready to win it with a field goal, and man, that was a bummer. We could have tied it. We could have won that game. That would have been great. Mm-hmm. But you know, that I think it was back to what you asked earlier, Cub, about, you know, you're saying what I did in terms of those stats, that, you know, we had Kirby, we had Slade, we had players on that team, and it wasn't, you know, me making all that stuff happen. It was a system. It was, you know, 4 years of learning, you know, under some great coaches, and then it's just having the opportunity. That's all that was. And, you know, it was awesome and fun. You know what also happens at that point, too, and you guys all know this, is I heard this before, and you know, one of the guys I really respected playing basketball against was Danny Ferry. Mm-hmm. He was just an amazing college basketball player. And one of the things he said was the game, when you get to a certain point, the game slows down a little bit for you. And I think that's what happened that year for me, is the game slowed down a little bit for me. And I knew what I was doing. I knew how to do it, and had really, you know, we had good guys on that team. We had a good team. Right. And that's when the game slows down for you a little bit, and it doesn't feel like, you know, two linebackers coming off the backside, you know, messes with you too much. You just deal with it and move on.
Right.
So that's kind of where that was too. You're a fifth-year senior, and you have some experience under your belt and some pressure situations, and, you know, so.
Hey, Matt, what do you think played a role that year? Because, you know, we both played in the Coach Wells offense, you know what his mindset is, you know, power eye, running the football. But, you know, looking at the scores, I mean, basically when you returned as a starter, it was only two games in which you scored less than 30 points, and that was Clemson and North Carolina back-to-back. Like, other than that, I mean, you had three straight games of putting up 40 points or more, which is – that's unheard of for a Coach Wells offense. Like, what was it like? Like, what was going on during those games? They all just jumping out on folks like that.
I know, and you can hear Coach Wells screaming now. I remember him. He hated scoring quickly.
Yeah.
He would yell, we scored too fast.
Yeah, we scored too fast. Christ, we need some rest. Let him rest. What are you doing? Why'd you call that?
Too fast.
Take our time.
He could have gone to a four-corner offense.
What?
He would have. He would have.
Yeah. Why are we snapping the ball so quick?
Yeah. Oh, no. I don't know. You know, part of that, you know, you asked that question. We you have some explosive players. With, you know, you had Mickey Fisher on the team. You had Terry Kirby. You had guys that could score quickly, and we could, you know, blow up a big play quickly. And, you know, it just was what it was. I mean,
it didn't hurt you had Big Red and those guys up front too, on the offensive line.
Yeah, right. I mean, exactly. We had, again, that's how I go back to saying all those players in that team.
Yes.
Man, Ray.
Yeah, you had some dogs.
Yes, you did.
For real. You know,
I'll take you really. Let me take you on a little tangent since it's been not live. I'll go fast forward to when I was with the Lions in my last year of my career. Uh-huh. And I'll tell you my last play ever. And Ray's involved. And Herman Moore's involved. And, Greg Jeffries is on the team.
Oh.
I mean, we have four who's on the team.
Wow.
But to this day, man, I'll smack Ray in the back of the head. I get in the game against the Washington Redskins. You remember how he
Washington football play, team now. They're watching the football team.
I'm sorry, Washington football team. And so Scott Mitchell is our starting quarterback, and he gets hurt. He goes down. Frank Reich, backup. He gets hurt.
Yeah.
So now I'm in the game. It's 3rd and 10. We're on our 5-yard line. 3rd and 10 on our 5-yard line. I go in the game. Tough. And, you know, it's like, cool. I'm going to come in and take a shot. You got Herman Moore and Johnny Morton out there.
Morton.
Two guys that could just fly and get a ball. Ray's the left tackle. Like I said, we're 3rd and 10 on our own 5 or whatever. I drop back. We're going to take a shot, call a cadence out. You know, I get on the center, call a cadence out. I drop back, and I go to throw the football and literally just pummeled in the back of the head.
Mm.
And the ball goes fluttering in the air. I want to say it was Chris Dishman.
Arrow pounds.
Picks it off. And he's running to the end zone. I'm trying to get off the ground to go chase him. I don't know why. It was more just, I got to do it. And I forget the linebacker. He's laying on top of me. He's like, nah, just stay down, man. Just stay down. And I was going to go and try to make something happen. He goes, nah, just don't worry about it. We're going to score. And so he runs it in. And that's my last play ever.
Mm.
And I go back to the sideline. And Coach Trestman is our quarterback coach. He's telling me, he goes, what happened to Ray? I said, what do you mean what happened to Ray? I have no idea what happened to Ray. Well, we watched the film. Ray never gets out of his stance.
Ooh.
And the Harvey, his last name was Harvey. He was the outside linebacker for the Washington football team.
Mm-hmm.
Comes flying around the edge, and he just lays me out.
Oh.
Ray never heard the cadence, never heard the count, and everyone's up blocking, and Ray's down his 3-point stance.
Oh, you're good.
Oh, my gosh.
Ironic.
So we're watching. We're watching the film the next day, and Bobby Ross is our coach, you know, and he just keeps replaying it. Ray, what are you doing? what's going on here? And Ray just, you know, Ray gives me that smile like, sorry, buddy. I'm like,
sorry, yeah, exactly. Yeah, sorry, buddy.
That's you, Ray.
So I really appreciated Ray between the years of 1987 and 1992 at UVA.
It took one play to change.
One game. Nah, Ray's awesome.
I got to run, but Maddie, if I don't ask you this Locker Room Access Nation or whatever it's called, they'll be upset with me. So I have a segment. I have a segment where you got to do your Mount Rushmore Virginia basketball.
Oh, my gosh.
And you can have five because of the big guy. He kind of makes it unfair.
He does make it unfair, doesn't he? Mount Rushmore of basketball. It's got to be Barry Parkhill, right? Yep. You know, Ralph, definitely.
There's no wrong answer.
Ralph, definitely. Uncle Bryant Stiff.
Yep. Had to go Brian.
I'm going Brogdon.
Brogdon.
That's four, right?
Yep.
Maybe that young.
I'm gonna stop there.
Okay, you got four. That's fine.
I'm stopping there.
That's a real.
There you go.
That's a solid Rushmore.
I like that group.
Yeah.
Oh man, real.
And there's some great players, and you know, you ask a question like that, and you're leaving out some unbelievable players.
Oh, it's like this much between one and the other, right?
Yeah.
I love it. All right, fellas. I appreciate it, John.
Appreciate you.
All right, I'll come back in.
Yeah, man. Good seeing you.
All right, Matty B. Good to see you, boy.
So Matt, I know you were talking about the team around you, and quite honestly, I think you were being a bit modest, because at the end of the day, you can have weapons around you, but if you're not putting it where it needs to be, putting the guys in position, then you know it equates to a lot of L's, maybe some close
L's,
but a lot of L's. I mean, you look at Virginia for that period of time, dude. We, you know, after you and after Shaw, and it was probably a 10-year stretch where we had a hell of a lot of talent on the Virginia team, but you know, we struggled at the trigger position. So while you're being modest, you know, let's just throw out a couple things here. Let's throw out finishing the season 135. 224, 60% completion percentage, 1,902 yards, 19 touchdowns, and zero interceptions.
Not a single.
Zero. Okay. That was the first time a quarterback in college history attempted at least 150 passes in a season without an interception. And you were the unanimous ACC Player of the Year.
Unanimous.
So, I mean, okay, you had talent around you, dude, but don't sell yourself short, because you put up numbers, bro.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, like I said, you know, you really is. I mean, you got guys around you, and you coach well, and things work out, and you know, those numbers, to be honest, I had no clue. And this is probably part of it too. It's part of the George Welsh era and how I grew up too. I mean, how you're brought up, you bring a lot to the game, right?
Right.
Your perspective, your mental perspective on it. Coach Welsh didn't care about that stuff. He didn't care about records. He didn't care about – he cared about winning football games and guys graduating from college and having great lives. That's all he cared about.
Right.
And so it's funny. After the Virginia Tech game, my senior year, we beat them pretty well. And we're in the locker room, and one of the reporters asked me a question about this record.
Mm.
And I'm like, what record? I had no clue it was even a record, like what was going on here. And he started listing off some numbers and all that kind of stuff. I said, well, yeah, I had no clue. I had no idea about it. And probably a good thing, because, you know, that stuff's in your head.
Yeah.
Regardless if you value it or not, it's in your head.
Right.
It just wasn't something, you know, Virginia sports, you know, under Coach Welsh and Coach Howland was about totally about we. It wasn't about any kind of star.
Right.
And he proved that over and over with Sean and Herman and all these guys that were amazing. And, you know, so I think something like that, I truly think is, that's why I say it's part of the team and part of who you're around. And, you know, you're given some God-given gifts, and that's, you know, you have to, I'm thankful for that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to this day, I mean, I had a chance to play in the NFL. I had a chance to, you know, make a little money on the front end of my life, with a sport that I work my tail off for, but I also have been given a lot and surrounded by a lot of people. And that's frankly, I mean, this is going into, you know, maybe down the road from your question, but that's why I'm in education. That's why I love education. I love trying to share those, that value and that thinking with kids, because it was shared with me.
Right.
And so when things work out like that and records happen and mm-hmm. people say, you know, people around you, the support you get, I hope they really mean it, because it's true. And, you know, nothing's done alone, because it, like you said, there were some great players down the road, and there were some amazing players in the league at that time, and not in the league. Like Charlie Ward was a part of that era. Mm-hmm. I mean, that guy was mm-hmm. ridiculous, right? And
yeah.
And there were some players that could change a game. You know, Sean mm-hmm. could change a game.
Yeah.
Sean could change the complexion of a game, period. That wasn't me. And so it worked out well. I mean, I'm very grateful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Matt, when you was coming out of high school, basketball was your first love. Basketball was the kicker. Like, if it's not included, yeah. you know, I can't go to university. Came to UVA. Basketball was, like you said, your love.
Yeah.
When did football ever finally supersede it in your heart, or did just the individual accolades kind of just show you that, okay, football is your breadwinner now?
You know, yeah, basketball was always my favorite to play. I mean, partly because, and I don't know, you know, as an athlete, my nature is more of a physical presence in basketball.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't do that in football. I was getting hit. I was one. I couldn't do any of the hitting. I couldn't do make any of the physical contact. I was trying to just throw the ball, right?
And survive.
And avoid.
Yeah.
I'll never forget, you guys know Joe Hall for sure, right? I remember mm-hmm. we were playing in the spring game at Scott Stadium, and after the game, during the game, he had kind of gotten through the line, and he thought he had me, and I just kind of sprinted around to the left and went off to the left and made a throw and ran out of bounds, and he was behind me. And he comes up to me like years later, and he tells me that story, and I remember it because, you know, Joe Hall, you know, he was like the mean guy on the defensive line you want to stay away from mm-hmm. during spring games. And he said, he goes, Blunden, I didn't know you could run like that. I didn't know you were that fast. I thought I had you, but, you know, you can move for a big guy. And the point there is you had to move. Like, if you didn't move, you were getting hurt.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting hit. I mean, it's just – you go a little bit faster in the game.
Yeah.
No doubt. You go
I mean, because
– Right, that right hole.
Say it again.
You go as fast as you need to.
Fast you need, yep. just go a little bit faster than the dude trying yeah. to tackle you.
And you're yeah, good. That's it.
So, you know, because when we look at basically how your football career played out, in a sense, you mm-hmm. know, you got Sean, who many consider as the GOAT, you know, Heisman
Absolutely.
Ballot. And then he leaves, so it's the big question mark is the quarterback position. Yeah. And it's no knock yeah. on you, it's just that's how revered
yeah.
he was.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by the end of the season, the biggest question mark is a unanimous ACC player yeah. of the year. Like, that to me is something like you make a movie about, like, oh, what are we going to do? I could just say, here comes a Christ. Who's going to hand the ball off? Just take care of the ball, Matt.
Yeah.
I don't care what
yeah.
you do.
Get it to Kirby.
Yeah. I mean, because essentially when you, like you said, you got hurt, the backup came in, they beat Navy,
yeah.
but he played well, and coach didn't yeah. even hesitate to bring you back in as a starter, which that was always something I respected about Coach Wilson. He would say, you're not going to lose your job through injury. Like, he would
yeah,
always
he
say,
did,
just
yeah.
take your time. When you're yeah. healthy, you know, he plugged you back in. And that's always tell that story about Coach Wilson. It's like,
yeah,
I love how he always handled injuries. Like, guys didn't feel that sense of panic. Like, even though the backup was doing what they were supposed to do and mm-hmm. play well, it's like, hey, we know who the starter is. And mm-hmm. if we have to, we could go back to you. But Matt's our
yeah.
guy. How did that help your confidence as well when coaches say, you know, you still our guy?
Yeah. I mean, again, I didn't – going into all those situations that we've already talked about, about Clemson and Virginia Tech and then mm-hmm. coming back after an injury, I just felt tons of support from those guys. And it wasn't just Coach Welsh. You know, there were coaches on that team that would connect with players in different ways and make them feel valued. Coach Wilmer. right? He would connect with anybody.
Right.
Yep.
So, you know, Coach Sherman.
Coach Sherman. You know,
their favorite times coaching, and it says a lot about them as people, wasn't on the field. It was actually after practice, sitting around outside the locker room or in the dining hall,
yeah,
talking to guys. You know, Coach Wormack, I was pretty down about some things playing early on with football and just kind of struggling a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, you're a young kid and trying to figure things out. And he picked up on that right away, pulled me aside, and we had a 1-hour conversation my third year, just sitting outside of Copley. I remember it now as clear as day. And, you know, he didn't talk at me. He just listened, and he just sat. And these guys cared for you as people, and that was it. And you knew, like, coming back to playing, you knew they had faith in you. And during the game, George would get upset and, you know, scream and yell, but he always circled. He always came full circle.
Yep.
He always came back.
So I know Cove want to transition to post-UVA, but I would be doing the fans a disservice of not always taking the time to take a shot at Virginia Tech, especially when you beat their ass 38-0. You alluded to it. So what did that feel like?
That was great. That game was so easy. That game was just easy. I mean,
yes.
It was. And I'm sorry. But, you know, and there were some great guys on that team. You know, they had some individual players. You know, Will Fuhrer, Eugene Chung was an lineman. I ended up getting to know a little bit later. They had some good players.
Mm-hmm.
As before, they became really, really good, and they started dominating some things. But as a guy growing up in Pennsylvania, it took me a few years to appreciate the Virginia Tech rivalry. Mm-hmm. You know, my mom was Penn State Pitt. Mm-hmm. That was a rivalry, right? You know,
yep.
And you're thinking about those things. And after a while, you really learn to appreciate this for what it was. I mean, this was an in-state battle that was a lot of fun to be a part of. I mean, just a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And one that's carried on to this day with friends of mine, you know, as we kind of banter back and forth about Tech and Virginia. So that's become a real fun part of my life now, kind of post-sports and being a part of the Virginia Tech rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of respect for a lot of those guys, you know, but beating them 38-0 like that was – It felt easy, and it was a good cap to that game that year.
38-0.
Wow. That's just that. That's music to my ears.
Yes, right? It is.
38-0. Oh, beautiful.
And his easiest game ever played at UVA. That's what I'm putting out there. Hey,
You added that.
That's what they hold. I didn't hear that.
I heard. The easiest game ever.
That's what I heard.
It's not how you start, it's how you finish. He finished his UVA regular season career with the easiest game versus Tech.
I love it. There it is. So after a dominant win like that, man, you guys, you know, accepted a bowl bid to the Gator Bowl. Oklahoma, you guys were, I think, ranked 19th or 20th, and they were 20th or 21st.
Yeah.
This was my first year in the league, and I remember coming down to Jacksonville watching you guys practice. And, you know, and for me, I was watching you guys practice, and I was like, is this a half-speed drill? You know, because in my mind, the pro game was so fast that then when I watched college again, I was like, why are they – you know, I was like, maybe why are they not moving full speed? I will never forget that. But I was just like, damn, the pro game is really that fast. Then you guys go down. Virginia's a point-and-a-half favorite to win the game.
Yeah.
You get absolutely mollywopped. 48-14. What the hell happened?
I know. That just felt like we were in a different league. You know, I don't know what happened. I'll tell you one thing. It did happen. Well, I didn't play well at all. I threw some picks that game and just felt off. I don't know what it was. Those bowl games. Well, you have about a month from your last game to the bowl game and trying to figure that all out. That's no excuse, but you just felt off, you know. And I remember that feeling of we just never got in a rhythm and we're just looking at each other on the sideline going, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And so you start losing your confidence a little bit. And once that happens in a game like that, you know, it's hard to recover. Yeah. I do recall, though, from their perspective, they were a running team that just ran over people and then threw all over us. They crushed us in the air. And that was a little bit of a shock. They moved from this this running attack to this pass attack, and we just couldn't do anything with it.
Right.
But offensively, we were terrible. So that was a really tough way to go out. I mean, talk about extremes. You go from being on one end of it and ending your regular season in the way we did, and then to go to that game.
Game in your and, career.
And you, yeah. And you
don't. See what I did? See what I did?
Oh, man. Yeah, I saw it. But I'll get over it. The thing is that you go to that thing and I just wanted to win a bowl game. You know, like we hadn't won a bowl game.
Yeah.
And it gives the program credibility when you start winning bowl games, regardless, yeah. Right? You know, yeah. That. And that's what happened to Bronco and the fact that they're winning some games, and it's really giving the program credibility. And I was disappointed about that. But, you know, that was a tough way to end a college career, but it still was a good time and a good career. And again, extremely grateful for that time then.
Hey, Matt, do you remember the play that you threw your interception at in the bowl game? Because you hadn't thrown one all year. So do you
I had a couple interceptions that game. I had a couple. Yeah. Yeah. And actually, I threw an interception in the last bowl game against Tennessee. I came in at the end. Sean was hurt.
Yeah.
I remember that one because that was Dale Carter, who I ended up playing with in Kansas City, and he let me know about it when we met up in Kansas City.
I bet he did.
Yeah, he did.
Cub, what you drive since you was in the league and everything, coming to watch little college guys practice?
What you drive down to the game?
Yeah, what you drive?
I think I had a Pathfinder. I just had a Pathfinder. It was my rookie year.
You was Airbnb rock right. Him in that joint.
Yeah, I just had my, but I did have purple lights underneath that go with the beat of the song. So
and a lava lamp in the.
No, not the lava lamp. You know, when that beat dropped, those lights.
Nice. No words. All you heard was bass. No words. Bass. What they saying? I don't care.
It don't matter what they say. But okay, so Matt, you were, you know, at that point, season's over. You were. Yeah. You were rated as probably the number three quarterback behind David Klingler and Casey Melton. You know, was prospects coming out that year. So did you kind of get a gauge at that where you thought you'd go? Did you think you'd go first round?
No, I didn't think I was going first round. You know, we kind of knew what it was going to be like. I actually was pretty excited it was that high in the second round because, you know, you had David Klingler, you had Tony Sacka out of Penn State. You know who else was in that draft was Ty Detmer, and nobody gave Ty Detmer much of a time because of his physical size, right? I mean, you guys know what the combine's like. You go to the combine and they put you up there in front of that room in your white shorts and that's it, and they want to look at you. They want to see who these people are that they're getting ready to draft, and it seems a little bit antiquated, but that's what it was. And you know, Ty didn't stand up to that test too well, but my man was an awesome quarterback. And he was a gamer, and you know, he was a slinger. He was that kid that could just get it done. And
he was an awesome college quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he lasted pretty long in the league, though. I think he played longer than I did.
Yeah, but that was just opportunity.
Yeah,
was opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
David Klingler,
second round pick, 40th pick.
Yeah,
that's pretty damn high, Matt.
You know what was really cool about that? The year before, going back to your original question about Ridley High School, the year before, my battery's about to die. I got to get my cord here in a second. My buddy, who I played high school with, went to Penn, and he was drafted in the second round of Kansas City. So I became his teammate. He went 4 years, got drafted. He was at Kansas City. I went 5 years. I got drafted second round, went to Kansas City, and we got to play together for 4 years in Kansas City.
That's awesome.
That was a really cool thing. But I was, you know, that was really great to be a part of that and to be drafted that high. And, you know, I knew if I had some time like I had at Virginia in terms of having some experience and playing, that I could play the game and I could do well. Mm-hmm. I just, to be honest, it felt like I never got a chance to step on a field and play. Mm-hmm. I had guys in front of me that were really good. You know, talk about GOAT, you know. You know, we had at the beginning of my time there, Dave Craig was the quarterback, and he was pretty good. But then they bring in Joe Montana. Mm. You're like, okay, you know, I'm not going to play until this guy decides he's not going to play anymore.
Right.
So it was a good experience, but I left kind of bitter about it in terms of not being able to have a real shot at playing and being on, you know, being on the field. And you know, that was tough. That was tough, but again, extremely grateful for having that opportunity to start out your life, having, you know, left Virginia. Amy and I got married a year after being out of Virginia, and you know, we're just celebrating our coming up on 28 years married and four kids.
Awesome.
I mean, it's just, you know, our life was really propelled from that time and being together at Virginia and in the NFL.
Right.
Yeah, because I mean, that draft, you was the fourth quarterback drafted. Ray went in the first round.
Yeah.
So you got two Virginia guys, first and second round, drafted. Yeah, it's some names, because just looking through, you got Darren Woodson was, I think he was drafted like right before you. Yeah, he was drafted right. Levon Kirkland was drafted right before you. Jimmy Smith.
Yeah, Levon Kirkland. Got hit me in the face at Thompson, yeah.
Yeah, Asa Ambrose. I played with him with the Falcons. He was an OG, so shout out to Asa Ambrose. He was drafted that same year. Of course, he had Desmond Howard in the first round that year as well. I mean, Dale Carter, first round. I mean, that it's Troy Vincent, Bob Whitfield. Yeah, that was a
– some players.
That's a draft,
big time
man.
Big time.
And you right there, brother. You right there.
Yeah.
Pat yourself on the back. Do you walk around, so we ain't got to that part yet, but do you walk around your school and be like, I'm the realest AD out here? I'm the realest AD in Virginia. Like,
nope.
I walked. Look, I actually lived it, you know? Jadakiss had a line. Y'all made up songs with Biggie. I made real ones. You looking at AD like, y'all out here giving rah-rah. Just check my files.
Right. No doubt.
I'm Matt Blunden.
You know that, Anthony. Oh, man. Can't do that. Can't do that.
I know. I'll do it for you.
Right. Yeah, don't worry about it. We'll do it for you, though.
I got you. Do you know who that is?
Right. Don't even worry. But, hey, but you know what, Matt? I got to give you a true shout-out, though, because Chris Berman gave
Berman.
Oh, yes.
Chris did.
Berman. Matt Werewolves of Blunden.
You know what? You could do all the when you were drafted or what awards you got, but until you get a nickname from Chris Berman,
see
you know,
there it is.
Legendary. You got a nickname for Chris Berman. What?
Yeah. There it is.
Werewolves of Blunden. You know what? What's hilarious about that?
What's that?
I started teaching at Monticello High School in Charlottesville in Elmore County after my career. So I went back to Monticello. I was teaching and coaching there. And a few years in, one of my students, I was teaching calculus, and one of my students figured out my background. He looked me up. Now remember, this is all in the beginning of all the internet and all this kind of stuff, right? So he starts researching me. Well, he puts out a video. He creates a video for his senior project called Werewolves of Blunden, and he does it about teaching and about teaching calculus and all this stuff. If you Google it, if you Google Werewolves of Blunden calculus, it's probably still out there somewhere. It's hilarious.
That's awesome, man.
When you can connect the kids that way, that's the best part about a nickname. Yeah,
absolutely.
You know, but I appreciate about you, Matt, is that not only were you a great athlete, but you truly put the student in student athlete. You know, you were a Dean's List guy. You lived on the lawn. You know, your degree is in mathematics. Mm-hmm. You came back and got your master's. Was it in teaching?
Yeah.
You know, you got your master's in teaching, and then you decide to pour back in to these young folks, and that started early. So you had me at hello, because you worked with Special Olympics athletes when you were in high school, and yeah, I have an affinity for the Special Olympics program and those athletes, man. And so you definitely had me at hello, but you have consistently poured in to these young folks, man. You know, getting into the school system, 17 years as a teacher and an instructional coach. I mean, dude, and then now in your AD post, still teaching sections of calculus. Man, dude, you are the example of what kids should aspire to be when it comes to student athletes, man, because, you know, the athletics won't last long. I mean, you know, you try to tell kids, hey, man, that average career is about 3.5 years. Yep. So, you know, you make sure you get that degree, finish that education so that you have that to fall back on, because it doesn't last forever. And so, man, you are someone that we can all point to. Mm-hmm. To just say, hey, man, if you want to model your career and what it's supposed to be like managing the student and athlete, then Matt Blunden is a great example of that. So kudos to you, my man.
Definitely, man. I think he might be switching. I know he said his battery was dying.
Oh, like we might have lost him for a little bit. Yeah, he looked like he dropped off. I'm sure he'll buzz back in. But yeah, Hawk, I mean, you know, you and I are constantly working with these kids, talking about a life plan and life mm-hmm. skills development. And, you know, Matt has put in the work, dude.
He definitely has, man. And when you look at Matt and his career, just think of the climate of today's sports. So you got a kid that wants to play both, is planning behind a guy like Sean Moore, gets in every now and then, and how he took advantage of his starting bid. Like, you know, that first game against Maryland didn't go well. He has that infection, missed two games. But once he regained his health, I mean, to have 19 touchdowns and no interceptions, that says a lot.
Yeah.
Decision-making, understanding coverage. You know, he was modest and humble in saying that, you know, DB did drop some bad throws that he made. But at the same time, when you know your quarterback's not going to turn the ball over, mm-hmm. you know they're going to be highly accurate and decisive with the football, it makes it that much harder. So it makes sense that when you look at – I mean, you got a back like Terry Kirby as well.
True.
And we know Coach Welsh's offense. Pound it, play action. Pound it, play action. And when you take your shots, you got to be – it has to be a high success rate or the offense won't work. And that was always Coach Welsh. Take care of the football, Christ. And if the quarterback's taking care of the football, offense has always been scary. I mean, that's pretty much every system, but especially Coach Wells, man, because it's rarely did he let you just let it rip. It had to be predicated based off establishing line of scrimmage and running the football. And I know it's games where they were like, we're not going to let Terry Kirby beat us. We're going to see if Blunden can beat us. And for him to be unanimous, that showed you that he was out there beating them also. You know what I'm saying? Just want a product of everybody loading the box up and he just beating one-on-one coverage.
Right.
For you to be unanimous, that means you did everything.
Right. And you missed two games.
And you missed two games. And one of your games was trash, was the Maryland game. He said it. So basically three games, you just throw out the window. So yeah. That speaks volumes, man.
Yeah, for real. Like I said, but you know, Matt's a humble dude, man. Mm-hmm. You know, humble, very unassuming. You know, he ain't a shit talker like me and you.
But that's why I do it for him.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Wait, yo, don't worry about it. We'll do enough for you, bro. Because you know, you have the numbers. You put it up. You gave the example of what is necessary for young student athletes to aspire to. So yeah. don't worry about it, bro. We'll sing your praises. We'll write the press clippings for you. So
how many quarterbacks in our school history can say they beat Virginia Tech by 38 points?
Right. That would be a big fat zero.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how spicy he can talk.
Yeah.
When it comes to Virginia Tech week and they saying, oh, we beat y'all this many times, he could step up and be like, first of all, our ACC player of the year. Second of all, I taxed y'all ass by 38.
Yeah.
All y'all don't talk to me.
That's it. And straight drop the mic on him.
Yeah. Right? And just walk away. And I'm 6'7".
And so. I'm 6'7". I personally put
up in your hind part.
Right.
I don't even talk. So you know you messed up when I'm talking.
There it is.
You know what I'm saying?
Like that. Yeah, man. But yeah, what's a great dude, man. Just a great mm-hmm. dude. And
well, you know what I want to ask you?
What up?
How was it like? Cause he was the meat squad quarterback when you were still there. So what was you doing to him, Cub? What was you saying to him? He wanted to start a name. You know, we real disrespectful to backup quarterbacks. with the cue cards. Oh, he coming back in. Matter of fact, I need to ask him that. I'm going to let him answer that.
Look, I was out there trying to battle Herman every practice. So, you know, I mean, look, I'm out there trying to get that work in.
No, I'm talking about when the meat squad was out, like the back of backups and the card go up, the audition crew.
You know, it was a little different then, though, man. It ain't like it was now.
Throw the ball you supposed to. You ain't never say that to a quarterback when we know we got him covered and we want to pick for the practice tape and they just don't throw it. Like, dog, come on, man. I need some work too. Let that thing go. I just ain't out here to run. Throw that mug up so I can practice intercepting this Jane.
Look, like I said, I'm out there trying to cover 87 and like, you know, because everybody else would, you know, it won't, you know, oh, so it was dudes like Herman. Mm-hmm. Sneaky dudes like Derek Boyd, you know, who didn't really get a lot of love, that should have got way more playing time.
Okay.
You know, Dooley, those kind of guys, they weren't hard to cover, good route runners though, but mm-hmm. you don't have to worry about a guy like him running past you. Terry Tomlin, fast as hell, so you had mm-hmm. to get on your horse, try to get hands on him. You know, Bruce McGonagall, quality tight end, Aaron Monday. Yeah, so you had
Money went to my high school.
Yeah, you had solid dudes like that, man. And then, you know, you had Curb and them coming out the backfield. Marcus Wilson, you know, that 89, 90 year. So Nicky Fisher. So you had some dudes that don't forget Gary Steele, you know, who would run. That was he was a big fullback and with speed. So, you know, you had some dudes out there that you had to focus on them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the quarterback gonna do what he gonna do. You know, I'm gonna peek in there, but I'm like, you know what? Let me get on this assignment. You know, I was a corner then, so hey, yeah. Is he his own man?
Oh
hey,
yeah,
hey,
yeah, I mean, yeah. About all that you up? Were a corner then, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How was the one-on-ones?
Bro, everybody be trying to duck Herman. I'm looking for him every practice. You know, because like I said, man, we made each other better. We made Saturday easy. I mean, yeah. Herman had all the skills, of course. But, you know, I worked him as hard as I could during the week to make it even easier for him and vice versa. So, you know, I didn't see dudes when I'm on the Saturday. I'm like, yo, I'm covering the best dude in practice every day. Mm-hmm. So my game is at a high level.
How was Herm? I know Herm, you know, Strider, Elevate. Great hands, but just overall route running. How was it playing off coverage versus him?
I hated playing off coverage, mm-hmm. you know, because I would want to get up into his body.
Okay.
And so playing, you know, but we didn't play an aggressive style then. Oh, and that's the one thing I hate, because we had the guys to play an aggressive style. You had Fly Jason Wallace on the other corner, me on the opposite side. We were solid at safety with McMeans and Ty. So, mm-hmm. you know, we had dudes that we could bring off the edge with Slade and Savage. You know, so we had dudes, but that was just – that kind of just wasn't our way. But, yeah. Anytime I got a chance to press Herman, I much more prefer that because, you know, being off of him with them strides, he up on you quick.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's like if it's me and him in a jump ball situation, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
You know, 44, 45-inch vertical versus – yeah, okay, sure.
And he was he strong? Like when you try, like did you have to try to quick jam or just be patient with him?
You could quick jam him, and because like his first year or two in the league, he struggled with that.
Okay,
he really struggled with the hands. Mm-hmm. But you know, Herman knew what I brought, and I knew what he brought. And I'll never forget he telling a story when we were playing Detroit. They were in the same conference. Uh-huh. He was like our wide receiver coach. We were watching film. He was like, he said, hey. Y'all see them? He's like, they playing Tampa. He's like, uh-huh. Y'all see this number 25 right here? If y'all come across the middle, you better protect yourself because he gonna hurt you. I was like, he said that? He was like, Cub, I lied to you not. I was like, wow. I mean, he was right. Yeah. I'm trying to peel your cap back if you come across that middle. That's why I couldn't play in the NFL today. They're talking about a defensive.
You was Chuck Cecil out there.
What? Cease defenseless receiver? He knew he was coming across the middle. He should have defended his damn self then. I'll be out there playing for free of coming to find. Wait a minute. All I do is hit him. Yeah, you hit him too damn hard.
What? Defenseless? hey, Matt, so now that you're back, I ask
sorry about this. That.
So, you know, defensive backs, we very chatty in practice versus like backups. Do you ever recall a time where Cove got chatty with you because he felt like you weren't doing something the quarterback that he was preparing for would have did, but you went against the script?
I don't. I'm sure right. It happened, but I don't. I'm sure it happened.
Oh, you lucky, dude. You lucky. See, Matt's such a good dude. He made sure he didn't remember that.
So. I don't remember that. What are you talking about, Cove?
Yeah.
I mean, Matt is 6'7", so Cove might not have did it.
No, nah, I told him. I said, I was out there dealing with Herman and all those guys. I don't know what Matt Nim and Sean were. I'm focused on these dudes out here.
See, man, I got to the story where it's times where, you know, you covering, you getting ready for, you know, game week, and it's the audition group, but you would still put your backup in because you still want a quarterback who can make throws. And I told him it was times where I'd be covering receiver. And you get a feel of what plays are going to be ran because it's the same as pass skill. So it's like, okay, I know he's the number one option right here, so I need to get a look. So they run the route, and even though the receiver's covered, I would be like, throw the damn ball anyway. Let me practice intercepting.
Practice it, yeah. I hated that because I hated that at all levels because you just want to, as a backup, you just want to win.
Yeah,
and you know, until you learn to play the game of helping the starters.
Right.
You know, helping the starters get better.
You hit a coach and give him a look. Throw it.
Give him a look. Yeah. Give him a look and practice throwing a pick.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
Then they'd be like, hey, you got to take care of the ball. Like, wait a minute. Yeah. You told me to throw that bad pass.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, man. Well, when you got disconnected, man, we were just really singing your praises, man. As far as, you know, you're the consummate example of what it means to be a student athlete. Mm-hmm. Talking about Dean's List, living on the lawn, you know, coming back to get your master's, and just really impacting the community, dude. And I just have to take my hat off to you, man, because, you know, for kids to aspire, you know, if we want to show them truly what it is to aspire to be a student athlete and care and make and really care and focus on the 40-year decision that you mm-hmm. make when you go mm-hmm. to college. You have given a prime example, man, of that. And I just wanted to offer you kudos, bro, and to just keep, you know, keep inspiring these young men and working in the community, dude, because, you know, I think these kids are watching, you know, and they view things differently now. And so the onus is on us to give them the example. And so I appreciate the work that you do, man, and that you've done and continue to do.
I appreciate that, Cove. I mean, it's an interesting way to put it, the 40-year decision. And you know, I think we have those moments every day. And I think the kids need to understand that. We make 40-year decisions every day, and now they're doing it on social media.
Right.
And for the good and the bad. Right. I was lucky in terms of being brought up in the right home and values and the right people around that kind of value the things that I came to really love. And mm-hmm. and that was about valuing other people and their points of view and maybe really truly appreciating what's been given to you versus mm-hmm. what's not been given to others.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and education has always been a cornerstone, and that's been a part that I've tried to just keep moving forward on. And, you know, you surround yourself with people that mm-hmm. value those things, you only get to keep doing it. And right. so it's been a good run so far.
Awesome.
Yeah. You talked about when you returned to be a teacher at Monticello. Mm-hmm. What were the steps, or when did you make becoming an athletic director your goal? Like, what was the steps if somebody wanted to transition from being a teacher to being an athletic director and the responsibilities that come with that?
Man, being an athletic director was never a goal.
Okay.
I'm serious. Being in education and trying to affect change has always been my goal.
Okay.
And purpose. And this door opened and I just stepped through it. You know, it was a little bit of a risk to come and be an athletic director, mm-hmm. But it was something we kind of made as a family and thought through it, how it would affect our family, not just leaving public education. I was in public education for about, you know, 17, 18 years and then moving to the independent school world and working with it, and kids in that environment. And it had an impact not just on my job, but our family. And so that's one thing that was, again, it wasn't a goal, but when doors open, you just say, let's take that risk. Let's take that shot, because who knows what's going to happen next. Mm-hmm. And as long as you keep doing things for the right reason, you'll be able to walk into a door knowing it's a risk, but having a little bit of confidence that you get the job done and awesome. Still having a positive effect.
Nice.
That's awesome. That's awesome, man. So how was it, you know, with the positive impact that you're having and kids understanding it now, when you got your jersey retired, 24 players to have your jersey retired at Virginia, how was that? How was the impact on you and your family and on the kids at school?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, we didn't talk a lot about it at school, but what's fascinating from our school is the boys, it's a boarding school at Woodbury. So they get to go to games, UVA games, on a bus from Woodbury, and they had no idea it was going on. So there was a busload of kids that were there. And so hearing back from them afterwards, like, Mr. Blunt, I know you had that kind of thing going on. Why didn't you tell us this stuff? You know, so that was kind of fun. You know, it's fun having, and they get to see who you are and see mm-hmm. a different part of your life. And that was quite an honor I didn't expect. And one which, you know, I do treasure and value and appreciate. It was nice being down there in the field with my family and just being a part of that whole thing.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
What's the feeling like from you watching UVA last season and having mm-hmm. an alum like Terrell Janna explode onto the scene?
Yeah, Terrell's an amazing, amazing player in person, right? You guys mm-hmm. see that every day. I mean, what he's done. I'm not a huge social media guy mm-hmm. because that's something that, you know, bothers me a little bit right now. But mm-hmm. I do try to follow some of those guys and follow what he's doing and some of his classmates during this time. It's just, you know, social justice. And you see what kind of human being he is and mm-hmm. the things that, you know, a guy like that is going to put everything into his craft of football. And he's just an amazing young man and an amazing athlete. And those two things together on the team matter, as you guys know.
Yeah.
So it's fun to watch that happen. It's fun to see that evolve. You know, there are a few Woodbury guys on that team.
Yes.
Over the years. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there was a pretty good class that came through Woodbury that kind of had some good football players in it. But yeah, Terrell's done a great job. It's just, you're so happy to see a guy do that. I guess I was there, his senior year was my first year.
Okay.
And so I got to know him a little bit, and we had a big transition with the football program at that point. And mm-hmm. And just to watch what he's doing is just great. I'm not surprised, because I got to watch him as a senior. It was ridiculous. Watching it. You know, we go back to my high school days at Ridley.
Yeah.
I never saw a guy like that in high school. Like, you never saw that kind of player in high school. So, he's amazing.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, Matt, before we let you get up out of here, we always end our show with a segment called Shut the Hell Up, I Am Underdog. And basically, it's just a segment that something that pisses you off, but you're going to overcome it anyway.
I got to tell you, what really pisses me off are all the folks that in social media like to just bang at people, like just pick at people and try to demonstrate something they know when they have no clue. You know, they have no idea what it's like to be in the arena, no idea what it's like to be in a tough situation.
Right.
And yet they want to go out and just throw something out to social media like they're an expert, and they think that's the real arena to get something done.
Right.
Social media is a great tool, and it's a great means to communicate certain things, but not to have a discussion, not to have the important discussions we need to have today.
Right.
And so it pisses me off to feel that people think that they really have a voice through social media that's going to affect change in a meaningful way, just doing it that way without getting face to face with somebody.
Right.
And, but we will get over it, because you know what? We are going to have discussions. We are going to have times, we will get past all this, and people will learn to not poke at each other that way and not take pot shots and not say things so hurtful and harmful that, you know, you can't take some of that stuff back.
Right.
You know, going back to what you said earlier, Cove, some of these things are 40-year decisions, and they're posting pictures and comments and opinions that, you know, you're better off, you know, think twice. And that kind of stuff really gets me right now.
Love it. Like, you like it, I love it. You like it, I love it.
In other words, Matt wanted to serve them some shut the hell up juice.
That's what it sounds like to me. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Matt, thank you so much, man, for taking the time to spend with us today, man. Continue doing great things. Continue to chase greatness. As Hawk and I always say, man, good is the enemy of great. And we both say that never settle for good when greatness is available. So continue to make sure that you pour into these young kids doing the great work, man. And so proud of you. Great to call you a friend and brother. And just keep living, man. Just keep living.
Likewise. Thank you so much, guys. It's an honor to be on the show and be around you guys.
And I can't let you off. I can't let you off without me telling you to please tell Ethan I said what's up. For the fans that don't know, Ethan Blunden. I met Ethan. Now, look, I didn't even know that was Matt's son. I had just started calling radio games for high school football. B.I. became the coach at Albemarle, so, of course, I became an Albemarle fan. And I was like, yo, man, you need to throw it to that tall receiver you got. He nice. And I just kept telling him every time I come to practice, yo, throw it to him. Throw it to him. And then he was like, you know who his dad is, right? Matt Blunden. And I was just like, oh, now you really got to throw it to him, then. With all-conference team MVP. I always thought highly of the kid, man. And so make sure you tell him I said
I will. Thank you very much. Yeah, I really appreciate you saying that. We'll do, man.
Cool beans. Well, look, folks, that's it for this edition of The Lockdown featuring T-Cub and Ball Hawk. We thank Matt Blunder for coming on, and a special appearance by Dougie Fresh. Earlier. And we're out until the next time. Peace and love.
So thankful, Matt.
See you guys.
Got a football scholarship.
All right, my man.
Thanks, guys.
See you, brother.
Hey, thanks so much, guys. Really appreciate it. Good talking.
Appreciate you, man. Yep. Enjoy your vacation.
We'll do, man. See you guys. All right. All right.